offering a most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. This is a program where we go through Swami's discourses, and in this particular season we're going through the 1991 summer course. We've gone through 10 discourses so far. This is the 11th discourse in that series. This is the discourse Swami delivered on the 31st of May, 1991. A very, very profound discourse. Even as the discourse progresses, Swami is constantly telling the translator to speak slowly, and Swami is saying that this is a very complicated one and needs to be spoken very calmly. And we can see why as we have gone through about one quarter of that discourse. So before I go into a short summary of what Swami has said so far, and before we go head to the clip which we want to play for this week, I, as always, invite Brother Hari from the Central Trust, and like the last couple of weeks, we have Brother Pradeep, who's also from the Shri Satya Sai Central Trust. So I welcome both of you. Sairam Hari, Sairam Sir.
Sairam Prem.
And this discourse, the title of the discourse itself suggests the three forms of God, and that's what we've been going through. And I think Swami has already spoken about two forms so far, right? And it all started off with Swami speaking about the divine bliss and how that can be, that which draws man to go through these various experiences in life. It's like a bait which eventually is hanging in front of him and which he is going after. And the difference between happiness and bliss, Swami says, the word for bliss is Brahmanandam, and that cannot be achieved without the Brahman. It is attached to the Brahman, and that's how you eventually head to Brahman through the process of Brahma Vidya. That's what Swami said before we went on to speak about the three different names or three different aspects of divinity, and how interestingly they are related to the three states that we experience in everyday life: the waking state, the dream state, and the deep sleep state. And the three forms are Virata, Hiranyagarbha, and Avyakrita, which is correspondingly related to the three stages. And they are also related to the gross, subtle, and the Karana, right?
Right.
And again, Virata, Swami said, is again spoken of in two different names, Vaishvanara and Vairajasuta, where Swami said Vaishvanara is that the identity of oneself in the form of I, or I am, or I am so-and-so. Swami said that is the Vaishvanara. The Vairajasuta is, even though in the gross form, it is subtle in the gross form. Swami says that it cannot be identified easily. That's what Swami went on to speak about, that aspect of Vairajasuta. He said, is one who exists in a mysterious form. And he exists in everyone, but is undetected. He performs all actions, but behaves as if he does not. He experiences everything but does not reveal it. That is the Vairajasuta aspect of the Virata. And then Swami went on to speak about Hiranyagarbha, where Swami said it's related to the one who is awake in the dream state. One who is the witness in the dream state is that Hiranyagarbha aspect of divinity. And I think Pradeep Sir very beautifully explained last time how Hiranyagarbha is the entity to whom all worship is addressed to. Any form of worship to any form eventually is addressed to Hiranyagarbha. And Hiranyagarbha is, so many things fell in place the way Swami explained it. It is almost like that divinity in the potential form. You know, anything can come out of that state.
The cosmic
cosmic egg, as Swami would say it. And quite understandably, you know, when you worship God, especially for a certain benefit, there are many many ways the events can follow, and it's almost like in that unexpressed form, and you are worshipping that form, hoping for one particular outcome in the many outcomes which are possible. And probably that's why every time you worship God for a certain benefit, it goes to that Hiranyagarbha form, which is like God in the form of potential outcomes, if you could say that.
Sum of all outcomes.
Swami says that's the Hiranyagarbha. And Swami says in the dream state, that is the supreme, if I could put it that way, in the dream state, the supreme form is Hiranyagarbha. In the waking state, the supreme form is Virata. Right? So Swami says that which causes all the dreams, that which causes all the different characters to appear in the dream state is Hiranyagarbha. Right?
And also, here Swami refers it by two other names also. Swami says that right. It is on the one side, Swami calls it the Sutratmaka. Okay, so that is cognizant of the fact that basically it is the same divinity that is present in all the beings.
Akin to a string which is running through the...
Exactly, so it's sutra means thread. So thread, that's the divine thread that is running through all the beings. So like in the dream state, this is what we discuss, right? Every actor we see in the dream state, right, is actually us in some form. It's been created out of our mind. And so therefore there is a unity in all of it, right? It's all one, the same consciousness. And so that's why Swami calls it Sutratmaka. And on the other hand, Swami also says that another name that would be apt for the Hiranyagarbha would be Prana. Because as we saw in our readings of the previous Upanishads, we saw that in the dream state, right, when all the senses have been withdrawn, the Upanishads, in a very evocative manner, they would say that the pranas would keep the body alive.
Right.
It is like it describes it as a village. The body becomes like a village with five fires that are burning, so corresponding to the pranas. So that's why it is appropriate to name the Hiranyagarbha as prana also. So that is what like Swami has been teaching us in the last few segments.
Right.
Upanishad says, Sarvam Khalvidam Brahma. All this is verily Brahman. But how to realize this, that everything is Brahman? For that, there are three forms are prescribed by Swami in this discourse. First one was Virat, then Hiranyagarbha, then Isura Vyakta will take up. So, Virata is gross cosmic form. Hiranyagarbha is subtle cosmic form. And Avyakta is causal cosmic form. And we can see that gross form led to the waking state. Virata belongs related to the waking state. Hiranyagarbha is related to the dream state. And Avyakta is related to the deep sleep state for our understanding purpose. So that's how this Swami has been describing three forms so that we can realize it. Now, what are the different function of this three entities which we are discussing so far? Virata is that who assimilate the food partaken by the living beings. It is called also Vaishvanara.
Right.
So Vaishvanara, we always chant
Aham Vaishvanara.
So Virata is that who assimilate the foods partaken by the living beings. Then what is the function of Hiranyagarbha? Hiranyagarbha is that who bestows vitality and strength through its vital force to prana. Then what is the function of Isura? Isura brings perfection of all individual being by bestowing the result of accumulated action according to whatever merit schemes they have done, according to that he bestows result of those action and he makes them, brings to them perfection, perfect state.
Okay.
That's how it has to be seen in this. So whole thing has to be realized as a Brahman form. Like whole thing has to be. We cannot ignore a gross form. We cannot say it is all illusion. It is not correct. It also form of Brahman. Similarly, we cannot say all dreams are all the same. Simply making of our own mind. No, it is not that. There are some reality. There is some reality in the dreams. So there is some witness. Who is the person witness in the? So that he is the real person.
Right.
Similarly, we cannot say deep sleep is a very different, we cannot experience it. No, it is experienced.
Right.
Deep sleep, we experience that pragya state.
Mm.
So that's how whole thing has to be. Our aim of the Upanishad is to realize everything is Brahman. So with that only they have been describing forms of Brahman and gods.
Mm. In fact, I think that is the uniqueness of this particular Upanishad that we are discussing. Just to give the context, the beginning of the discourse, Swami is speaking about the Taittiriya Upanishad. But when Swami is speaking about the Virata, Hiranyagarbha and the Avyakrita, these aspects, they are referenced in the Mandukya Upanishad. Okay, and that's why as I was reading through the Mandukya Upanishad, I found this amazing unity, across two dimensions. Like, one dimension is it is speaking about the same Brahman as being present in the different states of our experience. right, in the complete waking state, and then in the dream state, and even then beyond, like in the where we are not even aware of ourselves as a person, even in that state, right? So in all these three aspects it speaks about Brahman, and of course in the state beyond too. And again, when it comes to the person as the individual person as well as a cosmic person, it does not make much of a distinction between the two. It says, like, for all practical purposes we are speaking about the same thing.
No, so actually it just says I am Atma Brahma. This yes. form itself is Brahman.
Mm. Yes.
How to realize it? You cannot just think of very cosmic form. So you have to see from individual point of view. That's how this Vaishvanara, Tejasa, Pragya, in individual, how do you experience? Same thing has to be realized in the melted on the cosmic form. Mm.
Right. That's the idea. This idea, I think, the problem is, I was listening to one of the famous speakers on Islamic wisdom. You know, he has this habit of quoting from different scriptures and saying, so he has this habit of quoting from the Upanishads and saying, see, even the Upanishads say that God is formless. Mm. But you cannot take that idea from the Upanishad without speaking of this idea which is most central to it, where you say Sarvam Kaluvidam Brahma or Ishavasyamidam Jagat, that you can't speak of God being formless without speaking of this aspect of God being embodied in everything that you see around. Mm. Because that is the starting point, to see God as wisdom, to see God like even what Hiranyagarbha Swami says, that discriminatory power, that Prajnana, Subjnana and Vijnana, all of it has its source in this Hiranyagarbha. And Swami gives the example of the seed, where the seed contains in it the knowledge which is necessary for that seed to become a tree. And if you think of a seed for the entire universe, at the point of the Big Bang or whatever is the beginning of the universe, you talk of a small entity which contains in it the knowledge for this entire universe to come to be. Right, so we can come up with different explanations of evolution, and this is what happened. But there is, when you talk of Hiranyagarbha, the way the Vedanta speaks, it's so fascinating. It says that this whole energy, this whole knowledge came from one place, and probably that knowledge also has a source in a larger being. Right, and if you talk of this as an egg, then you talk of a being which created this egg. Right, and I think that's the next form which Swami is going to talk about.
Actually, it is not possible to describe the glory of Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyagarbha has been described same aspect in various ways. Even Taittiriya speaks of Vijnanmaya Kosha, plane of Vijnanmaya. So that's what Vijnan Bhaskar, Swami says Vijnan Bhaskar. It is a plane of Vijnana where you get all knowledge, intuitive knowledge. So this is related to the Vijnana. And when we take up Avyakta, it is a plane of bliss, Anandamaya, Anandamaya Kosha.
Right.
So they are interrelated, they are spoken differently, every seer speaks his experience differently, but more or less they are Ekam Sati Prabhavi.
In fact, as you were saying this, I was reminded of a famous quote by the Advaitic master Nisargadatta Maharaj, a very memorable quote. He says that wisdom is knowing that I am nothing, and love is knowing that I am everything, and it is between these two that these two banks that the river of my life flows. So says on the one hand, as you were mentioning, like there is a formless, right, which is to say is nothing. The entire universe is at its base nothing. So wisdom is knowing that I am nothing. At the same time, love, so this Brahman has expressed itself as his entire universe, and Brahman itself is experiencing and enjoying this universe, and as such that is the aspect of love. So love is knowing that I am everything, and it is between these two banks that the rivers of my life flow. So
interestingly,
that's a beautiful
thing. Whenever Swami would during the Shivratri, whenever Swami would materialize the Hiranyagarbha Lingam, one of the things which Swami would constantly repeat is the aspect of love springs forth from the Hiranyagarbha. Swami would say Hiranyagarbha is in the right side of the, the Hridaya, which is on the right side. Swami would say the feeling of love actually comes from Hiranyagarbha. Mm-hmm. And that is why it is necessary to worship God as Hiranyagarbha, because that source of love, probably as you're saying, when you relate to beyond the deep sleep state, what you talk of is the Mahakarana or whatever it is, where the human being cannot even experience that or talk about it or explain that. But what we can talk about is definitely love. That is something which you everyday experience in some small quantity. Might not be in that supreme quantity, but at least you have a sense of what that is. So coming back to that Hiranyagarbha, which is in a sense that unexpressed multiplicity, if you could call that. And love actually comes from that kind of unity, right? So Swami is saying that Hiranyagarbha is the representation of the unexpressed divinity, and love is actually coming forth from that. Well, of course, it's very interesting to talk about it, but I think it's, as Saru is telling, you know, the whole idea is to experience that and go towards that experience.
You spoke about expressing. Actually, Hiranyagarbha is that most subtle form where radiation started, the space-time has not separated. Everything is seen as a continuum, space-time continuum.
Okay.
Material creation has not started, even five elements have not come. Everything is in a very sort of a elementary state. Mm-hmm. Not even element particles like proton, electron have not yet started emerging from that. So elementary state where effect just started, but it is not fully diversified.
Right.
Avyakta is a plane where it is a there is no diversity, there is no duality at all. Mm-hmm. There is no diversification. It is a nirvikalpa state.
Right.
Now, when it started slowly, this is a state where space-time yet to emerge.
Mm-hmm.
The effect just started. So whole thing is seen as a continuum, a space-time continuum. And modern science say that it cannot be explained, this space-time continuum. All the thing there may be possibility, but they say it cannot be explained.
Mm-hmm.
When it is so with the case of Hiranyagarbha, you can imagine this state of avyakta, where they, not even light, radiation emerged, whole thing unmanifest, whole thing is just will of Ishvara is functioning there.
Mm-hmm.
How difficult it is to explain that. So there is a difficulty in describing the these two states. And of course, when you take up the Brahman itself, there is no way we can even describe.
Mm-hmm.
It is absolute. It is there is neither a cause nor effect. Mm-hmm. It's just a totally withdrawn to itself. Nothing can be explained about it.
Right. So I think shall we go to the next clip where Swami starts speaking about this Avyakrita, the third aspect of divinity.
Inka moododi, Avyakrutudu.
The third one, Avyakrutudu.
Avyakrutudu naga, yetti akaramu lene kunti vadu.
Avyakrutudu means, has no form, formless.
Itanu karanastha avasthariramunandu.
He in the causal form.
Indulo paripurnamainatuvanti yokka roopa rahitugai.
He has no form in all splendor.
Susupti sthitini anubhavistuntadu.
He enjoys deep sleep.
Itaniki yetti aakaramu ledu.
He has no specific form.
Aakaramu ledu kani.
Though he has no form.
Annintini taanu swadhinam chesukuntunnadu.
He controls everything.
కరచరణాది అవయవములు లేవు కాని
హీ హాస్ నో లిమ్స్
అన్ని పనులు చేస్తున్నాడు
హీ డస్ ఆల్ యాక్షన్స్
అనేక దూరముకు కూడాను ప్రయాణం సలుపుతున్నాడు
హీ ట్రావెల్స్ టు డిస్టెంట్ ప్లేసెస్
నేత్రములు లేవు కాని
హీ హాస్ నో ఐస్
అన్నింటినీ చూస్తున్నాడు
హీ సీస్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్
శ్రోత్రములు లేవు కాని సర్వమును వింటున్నాడు
హీ హాస్ నో ఇయర్స్ ఇన్ ఫ్యాక్ట్ బట్ లిసన్స్ టు ఎవ్రీథింగ్
కనుక సృష్టికి సంబంధించినటువంటి సమస్త కర్మను కూడాను ఆచరిస్తున్నాడు కానీ ఆకారం లేదు
దో హీ అండర్టేక్స్ ఆల్ యాక్షన్స్ రిలేటింగ్ టు ద వరల్డ్ హీ హాస్ నో ఫామ్
ఇతనినే అవ్యాకృతుడు అని పిలుస్తూ వచ్చారు
హీ ఇస్ కాల్డ్ అవ్యాకృతుడు
ఈ అవ్యాకృతునకు మరి రెండు పేర్లు కూడా ఉంటున్నాయి
అవ్యాకృతుడు హ్యాస్ టూ అడిషనల్ నేమ్స్
రెండవది అంతరాత్మ
ద నెక్స్ట్ వన్ ఈజ్ అంతరాత్మ
మూడవది ఈశ్వరత్వం
ద నెక్స్ట్ వన్ ఈజ్ ఈశ్వరత్వము
విరాటుడు హిరణ్యగర్భుడు అవ్యాకృతుడు అనేటువంటి ఈ ముగ్గురి ఎందుకు తిరిగి మూడు మూడు పేర్లు ఆవిర్భవిస్తూ వచ్చాయి
అవుతా విరాటుడు హిరణ్యగర్భుడు అవ్యాకృతుడు దేర్ ఆర్ త్రీ అదర్ నేమ్స్ దట్ హ్యావ్ కమ్
ఇవన్నింటి యొక్క అంతరాత్మం ఏమిటి
వాట్ ఈస్ ది సిగ్నిఫికెన్స్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ దీస్ నేమ్స్
అంతరాత్మ అనగా
అంతరాత్మ మీన్స్
తన నుండి అన్నింటినీ ప్రేరణ చేసేటువంటి వాడు
హీ ఇన్స్పైర్స్ ఎవ్రీథింగ్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్
ప్రతి ఒక్క ప్రేరణ కూడాను అంతరాత్మ నుండియే ఆవిర్భవిస్తుండాలి.
ఎవ్రీ ఇన్స్పిరేషన్ కేమ్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ అంతరాత్మ,
దట్ ఈస్ ది ఇన్నర్ వాయిస్. అంతర్వాణి,
దట్ ఈస్ ఇన్నర్ వాయిస్.
అంతర్వాణికి ఆధారభూతుడు అంతరాత్మనే.
ద బేసిస్ ఆఫ్ ఇన్నర్ వాయిస్ ఈస్ అంతరాత్మ.
మానవుడి యందు ఆవిర్భవించేటువంటి సమస్త శబ్దములు కూడాను అంతరాత్మ నుండియే ఆవిర్భవిస్తున్నాయి.
ఆల్ సౌండ్స్ దట్ హ్యావ్ కమ్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ మ్యాన్ హ్యావ్ యాక్చువల్లీ కమ్ అవుట్ ఆఫ్ అంతరాత్మ.
సమస్త విధములైనటువంటి శబ్దములకు అంతరాత్మనే మూల కారణము.
సో ఫర్ ఆల్ సౌండ్స్ ఇట్ ఈస్ అంతరాత్మ, ఇన్నర్ వాయిస్ ఈస్ ద బేసిస్.
ఇంకా ఈశ్వరుడు,
ద నెక్స్ట్ వన్ ఈశ్వరుడు.
ఈశ్వరుడు అనగా ఏమిటి?
What do you mean by Ishwara?
ఇతను సకలేశ్వర్య స్వరూపుడని పేరు ఉండినప్పటికీ,
though he has a name that he has all forms of wealth,
ఈ పరిస్థితి యందు తాను ఒక ప్రతి దానిని కూడా శిక్షార్హుడుగా ఉంటుంటాడు.
Under these circumstances, in everything, he is ready to receive శిక్ష.
మంత్రి చెడ్డలను విచారణ కలిపి శిక్షను అందించేటువంటి వాడవుతాడు.
He gives a punishment basing on the good and bad.
దీనినే లోకులు లయకారుడు అని కూడా పిలుస్తూ వచ్చారు.
ఇన్ ద వరల్డ్ హీఈస్ కాల్డ్ ఎన్హిలేటర్.
క్రియాశక్తి అతని యందు ఉంటుండాలి.
హీ హాస్ గాట్ ద పవర్ ఆఫ్ యాక్షన్.
ఆ క్రియాశక్తి చేతనే మానవుని యొక్క మంచి చెడ్డలను నిర్ణయం చేసి దానికి తగినట్టు ఫలమును అందిస్తుంటాడు.
అవుట్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ పవర్ ఆఫ్ యాక్షన్ హీ జడ్జెస్ బిట్వీన్ ద గుడ్ అండ్ బ్యాడ్.
ఐశ్వర్యం అందించేవాడనగా ఏమిటి? మంచి చెడ్డ రెండు ఐశ్వర్యంలే.
వాట్ డు యూ మీన్ బై ద వన్ హూ కన్ఫర్స్ వెల్త్? The one who gives you the good and bad is Aishwarya, the wealth.
Eeshwarudu sakaleshwarya swaroopuduga untundi. Manavuni yokka manchi cheddalanu taaru ninnayinchi daariki tanivanti phalithamunu andistuu untadu.
As Eeshwara represents all forms of wealth, he judges between good and bad and gives the treatment.
Kevalamu artharahitamainativi gaani leka edo oka యోగులకు మాత్రమే ఋషులకు మాత్రమే సంబంధించినటువంటివి గాని కానీ మనం భావించరాదు.
వీ షుడ్ నాట్ కన్సిడర్ ఉపనిషత్ యాజ్ మీనింగ్లెస్, యాజ్ దో యాజ్ ఇఫ్ దే ఆర్ మెంట్ ఫర్ యోగులు ఆర్ యోగీశ్వరులు.
ఉపనిషత్తులు ఈనాటి విద్యార్థులు గుర్తించలేకపోవటం కారణం ఏమిటి?
వాట్ ఇస్ ద రీజన్ ఫర్ స్టూడెంట్స్ నాట్ రికగ్నైజింగ్ ద వాల్యూ ఆఫ్ ఉపనిషత్?
దీనికి సరైనటువంటి అర్థములు ప్రబోధించి
the one who really teaches the actual meaning
yatruku nitya jeevithamlo anukunyamainatundi okka margamuna darini pravesha pettatam lekapovatam chetane vidyarthulu dani grahinchukolekapothunnaru.
There is no proper one who will teach upanishads relevant to the daily life so that they would carry on in their action. Therefore the guy is not
vidyanamu ye vidhamainatundi margamlo dinadina abhirudhi pondutunnado.
Just as we find the science and technology which is on the rise,
ivanni kudanu puramu ఉపనిషత్తుల యొక్క సారమే.
దే ఆర్ ఆల్ అట్ వన్ టైమ్ ది ఎసెన్స్ ఆఫ్ ఉపనిషత్.
ఈ ఉపనిషత్తులన్నీ కూడాను వేదముల యొక్క అంత్యమే.
ఉపనిషత్స్ ఆర్ ది ఎండ్ ఆఫ్ వేదాస్.
వేదముల యొక్క అంత్యం ఒకటి చేతనే దీనికి వేదాంతములు అని కూడాను మరొక పేరు.
యాజ్ ద రిప్రజెంట్ ది ఎండ్ ఆఫ్ వేదాస్ ఇట్స్ కాల్డ్ వేదాంత.
కనుక ఇది జ్ఞానమయమైనటువంటివి.
ఇట్స్ ఫుల్ ఆఫ్ విజ్డమ్.
జ్ఞాన స్వరూపమైనటువంటివి.
వెరీ ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ విజ్డమ్.
జ్ఞాన ప్రకాశమైనటువంటివి.
ఇట్ షైన్స్ ఎఫల్జెన్స్ ఆఫ్ విజ్డమ్.
జ్ఞానం అనే మానవుడు పొందాలి.
సచ్ విజ్డమ్ మ్యాన్ షుడ్ ఎక్వైర్.
భౌతిక లౌకికమైనటువంటి జ్ఞానములు కేవలము ఈ భౌతిక ప్రపంచములకు మాత్రమే సంబంధించినటువంటివి.
ద వరల్డ్ ఇన్ ఫిజికల్ నాలెడ్జ్ రిలేట్ టు ద వరల్డ్ ఓన్లీ.
మానసిక శాంతి,
ద మెంటల్
సుఖము, ఆత్మానందము పొందవలనన్నా ఉపనిషత్తుల యొక్క విషయాన్ని కొంతవరకు నువ్వు విచారణ చేయాలి.
టు హ్యావ్ ద మెంటల్ పీస్, హ్యాపీనెస్ ఇన్ లైఫ్ అండ్ ఆల్సో ఆత్మిక్ బ్లిస్, వన్ షుడ్ లర్న్ ఉపనిషత్.
ఈ విరాటుడు, ఈ హిరణ్య గర్భుడు, ఈ అవ్యాకృతుడు, ఈ మూడు కూడాను వేరే ఎక్కడనో ప్రత్యేకంగా లేవు.
విరాటుడు, హిరణ్య గర్భుడు, అవ్యాకృతుడు ఆర్ నాట్ సపరేట్లీ ప్రజెంట్.
వీటిని సూక్ష్మరూపంలో మనం విచారణ చేసినప్పుడు ప్రతి మానవుడు కూడాను విరాట స్వరూపుడే.
When you inquire clearly, we will understand.
ప్రతి మానవుడు కూడాను హిరణ్యగర్భుడే.
ఎవ్రీ మ్యాన్ ఇస్ విరాట స్వరూప, హిరణ్యగర్భ.
మానవుడు కూడాను అవ్యాకృతుడే.
ఎవ్రీ వన్ ఇస్ అవ్యాకృత.
అయితే అల్పమైనటువంటి మార్గంలో మనం ప్రవేశించడం చేత మనకు ఈ విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క అనంతమైనటువంటి యొక్క తత్వాన్ని అర్థం చేసుకోలేకపోతున్నాం.
బికాస్ యూ ఎంటర్ ఇన్ టు నేరో పాత్ ఇన్ లైఫ్, వీ ఆర్ నాట్ ఏబుల్ టు అండర్స్టాండ్ ది ఇన్ఫినిట్ మీనింగ్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్.
that was the next clip in that discourse where Swami is speaking about the third aspect, what was referred to as avyakrita. And Swami went on to say how it is related to the deep sleep state. As we said, the Hiranyagarbha relates to the dream state and the Virata to the waking state. Right? That's where Swami starts from.
Actually, Hari brother mentioned that about Mandukya Upanishad. So Mandukya Upanishad describes the third state as Sa Sarveshraha Sarvagyaha Esu Antaryamihi.
Mm-hmm.
He is Sarveshra. He is a lord of all. Ishvara or Sarveshra, both are same. He is Sarvagya.
All-knowing.
He knows, omniscient.
Omniscient.
Why is omniscient? Because he alone knows, he has full knowledge of creation, sustenance and dissolution of entire creation. Nobody else has this knowledge except Ishvara. And he is Antaryami, Esu Antaryami. He is the indweller of all beings. That's how Mandukya Upanishad described this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is significance is this? Swami said in this discourse that he doesn't have eyes but he sees everything.
He doesn't have limbs but he travels to distant places.
Now, Mandukya Upanishad further says, we discussed last discourse, that in waking and dreaming state, we have ekon vishati mukha, 19 mukha. Mukha means sense of perception. We discuss also 19, what is 19? 5 karmendriya, 5 gyanendriya, 5 pranas and 4 in antakarana, 19. So waking state we have this 19 and say corresponding subtle of these senses are in dreaming state. But what is the sense of perception in avikta or instead of pragya, mandukam shet, cheto mukha? Consciousness alone is the mouth. Consciousness alone is the mouth. Means is sense of perception. Means is perceive everything through consciousness only in this state. If you know Keno Upanishad describes how the same whatever Swami is telling describes in almost similar manner.
Mm-hmm.
He says that consciousness is that which sees not by the eye but by which
the eyes.
I see.
Right.
It is the eyes of eye. Similarly, it says it doesn't sense, but is the, it by which and senses perceive their perception, sense object. So it is sense of senses, prana of prana, is a mind of mind, is a ear of ear, eyes of eye. The idea is that this consciousness doesn't work through, operate through this known senses to us. It is works through a different, which is inherent in every individual, but we are unaware of this because we are sort of misled by the external world. We never, very rarely, anybody who has withdrawn himself in the heart, he only can operate to this particular sense.
Mandukya Upanishad, even as you were saying, they use the word prajnana ghana, like it's...
It is a prajnana. Condensed consciousness.
Yeah, it's
the whole
like
thing is perceived as consciousness.
Dense block of like undifferentiated consciousness.
Everything is perceived as consciousness. You don't see this as matter, he is a person of with this mental faculty, this intellectual faculty. No, everything is seen as a consciousness. So this is a spiritual state where everything is seen as a one unit in unity of spirit and unity of consciousness. We don't see there in a differentiation of the matter. So there it is described that through consciousness everything is perceived. It sees everything, not through its gross or subtle sense, but there is a difference which is and the same Keno Upanishad says the Sangyana. This is another word which is used in so many places. One of those places that says.
In fact, there is a verse that I saw in the Mandukya Upanishad in which it is describing exactly as Swami has mentioned over here, the characteristics. So in the Mandukya Upanishad, this state or the God or the witness in this particular state is referred to as Ishvara.
Right.
So it eulogizes this this God, right? It says, Esha Sarveshvara. This is the Lord of all things. Then Esha Sarvagnya, he knows everything, right? All knowing. Esha Antaryami, So, like, you know, he's present in all beings. He's the indweller of all beings, as Swami speaks over here. Esha yonis sarvasya. So, he is the person from which everything is sprung.
Origin of everything.
The origin of everything. And goes on to say, it is the beginning and end of all things. Prabhavapyeho bi bhutanam.
Dissolution of everything.
Yeah. So, beginning, so even the beginning and the dissolution of all beings happen in this particular speech. So, in fact, you find a sense of exhilaration even when you're reading this, you know. So, you, the other states, like you're just hearing a description, but there's a sudden, you know, shift in gear. You can see when the Mandukya Upanishad dwells on this particular aspect, you know, the cosmic person who exists in the deep sleep. So there you suddenly see, like, you know, as if you suddenly come face to face with God himself. It's like, you know, till then you're with the individual. So the individual has all kinds of psychosis, neuroses, all are operating. And so you're not able to very easily witness the God in that person. And then the person goes to sleep, and yet when you go to sleep with you, you're carrying the impressions of, you know, your day-to-day happenings. Then the memories of, you know, several past impressions and all are there in the chitta. So they all filter through into your dreams, one way or the other. And so there is still that cognizance of being an individual person who's going through the ups and downs, you know. But finally, when all of this is withdrawn, the, you know, there's only that block of consciousness, so to speak. So the moment the sage, whoever has, you know, read out or recited the Mandukya Upanishad, he comes face to face with this being who's present in all of us. He suddenly starts, you know, he breaks into song, as it were. So he starts speaking as if, like, he has already seen God, God himself. And the really the interesting thing is, it's still talking about the individual person itself. It is still speaking about like the divinity that is inherent in each one of us. That is the beauty of this Upanishad.
But when to look at it this way, if you are talking about the part where Swami is telling you, you know, that's the inner voice, it animates everything, it makes all the choices. How do we reconcile that with the idea of immorality in the waking state? I mean,
right.
All of immorality and wrong actions and wrong choices, all of that comes in the waking state. So how is it? Is it that in this state, or in the deep sleep state, or the avyakata state, when we look at life with its ups and downs and with its what we call as good and evil, is it that everything appears as just illusion, or does that appear like that is also as part of divinity? What would, how does the
state of avyakata? There is no sense of duality. If you are seeing from the point of experience point of view, it has to be experienced in Savirkalpa Samadhi. Though Mandukya Upanishad compares this with the deep sleep state, there's significant differences there in these two states, Savirkalpa Samadhi and deep sleep state. Deep sleep state, you are not aware that you are in a blissful mood. You are just, you are not aware. When you come out of deep sleep, you say, oh, I had very nice sleep. But in Savikalpa Samadhi, you are aware of that you are blissful self, their Atman. This is a sort of subtle difference is there. So when we go to the Savikalpa state, there is no, because in that state there is no intellect. Intellect only discriminate. This is good, this is bad. But in Savikalpa Samadhi, intellect also merges in its cause. So here the yogi is not aware of any good or bad. There is a Upanishad passage which says it knows everything, but still it doesn't know that it knows.
Okay.
The idea is that even though he is a witness of everything, but he is not aware that he knows this is good, this is bad. Good and bad comes only when consciousness comes down to intellectual plane, at plane of vijnana. There only it starts identifying, oh, this is good, this is bad. So in Savikalpa state, Savikalpa Samadhi, a yogi is not aware of what is good, what is bad. He doesn't know what is enmity, what is friendship. All this thing, duality, is not, he is not aware, totally unaware. So there is a state of full bliss because he is totally unaware of a world of duality. We are sort of in stress, strain, and we are in sorrow, happy because of dual life.
Mm-hmm.
But a yogi in a Savikalpa state is not aware of that. This starts only when we come down to plane of Vijnana. Vijnana is the plane where diversity starts.
Mm-hmm.
And as when you further come down to plane of Manomaya, mental plane, it further it sort of a diversifies, becomes ego starts, ego ahankara starts. Then mm-hmm. further when it comes down to Pranamaya and Annamaya, it becomes so much obsessed with the form, name, forms, this possession, this thing. That's how evil starts.
Mm.
Evil cannot arise in a state of non-duality. Evil, whatever you are talking about, whatever good or bad, starts only when duality starts. So if you want to be in a spiritual state, you have to be in the state of Savikalpa Samadhi. Otherwise, at intellectual plane and mental plane, we cannot escape this sorrow, happiness, whatever you call, dual enmity, a friendship, like that. This continues. So, there is a significant difference between what Indian philosophy believes and what Western philosophy believes. Western philosophy says, whatever good is there done, it is done by God. Whatever bad is done, it is done by the evil.
Mm-hmm.
But Indian philosophy says, no, both good and bad are outcome of same God. Through unified consciousness, to non-duality, all good quality, love, harmony, all this thing, good quality emerges. From all duality, all this bad quality starts. So, Brahman is the cause of everything, whether good or bad. So, Swami must have referred good and bad. Both are the prosperity of the Brahman.
Mm.
So, it depends how you look at the things. If you are indrawn and sort of a non-dual state, you will experience everything as blissful. But the moment you come down, you are starting ego, you are getting attached to the form, name, form, your desire and all that. At the time, this evil starts. So that's how we have to see it.
Because even good and bad, the words themselves arise at the level of the individual. Because again, first of all, what is good?
What is good for one and bad for another, in the sort of a empirical world. So we have to see the fundamental, finally.
I think in one of the discourses in this very series earlier, Swami said, you know, very beautifully, like how you were saying, hunger is a disease, food is a medicine, thirst is a disease, and water is the medicine. In that sense, Swami was saying that the cravings of the mind, you know, what we call desires or ambitions or whatever it is, what causes us to probably go astray from the righteous path or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Swami said that is a disease, and the medicine for that, Swami said, is action.
Exactly.
Interestingly, because Swami said all the action is what leads to purification of the mind, or what we refer to as chitta shuddhi. Because even what we talk of as Savikalpa Samadhi, or being able to operate from this level, is what Swami is talking of. That is not possible unless you have sublimated your mind and your actions, you know, in the waking state.
Correct.
And most often, that is where the confusion comes, where we are operating from the dual state, and we are confusing it with the state where there is no duality of good and bad.
Right.
And saying that, how can you explain that you have to go beyond bad if you're meant to be moral in that sense?
Correct. Because one thing we should understand is that, like as the Upanishads have been saying, the path is to look inward, right? Whereas the senses are forever drawing us outward, whereas the attention has to be inward. So this may not inspire us as much as to say, like, this is good and this is bad. Like, our mind understands that very easily. So when we are given, you know, the moral principles of living, so some we get attracted by that. But in fact, the motive is simply this, that when you live according to moral principles, in the first place you notice that you have to possess, you know, that control over the mind
itself.
You have to develop that discipline. And that is a very essential quality for a person to be able to even start perceiving the inner world.
Right.
As to what he is really missing. Like as we've spoken about in earlier discussions, like this is, in our present life, what we perceive as freedom is the freedom to indulge in our senses. But the Upanishads, the great masters have always been pointing out that that is simply another form of slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That where, so if you are disciplined on the other hand, you're cultivating the true freedom, where you're able to, yeah, you're able to rein in your senses, mm-hmm. or not given to them, like as if you're a slave to the senses mm-hmm. itself. So that is when you, there is the beginning of mastery. As far as the Upanishads are concerned, that is when you take the first steps at looking at the inner world. So I see it that way. That good and bad, yes, they're absolutely essential. But the way we look at it is not from the form of punishment or rewards.
I think that's where the issue lies, where even the following of good and bad, you're looking at rewards within this dual nature world.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the very fact that why we raise this question, why do good people suffer? Is because we feel that the reward for goodness has to be in the dual plane which we are living.
Yes.
Whereas Swami is saying that in spite of the suffering that you face when you follow the right thing, if you, as you're saying, if you're still able to follow the thing what you're supposed to do, then it means that you have completely withdrawn your senses. In fact, I think even Patanjali Yoga Sutra, he says it's one of the things is your ability to withdraw your senses and to derive more joy out of the withdrawal of the senses rather than the satisfaction of the senses.
Exactly. Because many people have conflated this thing that there's the transformed life, you know, what the sages, the avatar, they all show a particular path. So they think that the moment I get onto that path, now I'll be free of all troubles, of all anxieties, worries, and only good things will come my way. And which is, so somehow that conflation has happened in our minds, that a transformed life is a better life.
Right.
But if the the sages or even Swami has been constantly pointing out that that may not be true. If you look at the travels that the Pandavas had to undergo, and if you look at the travels which Harishchandra had to undergo, all of them came from a different motivation. That we'll stick to the path of the righteous because that is who we truly are.
Right.
And it had very little to do with, you know, if I do the good things, then God will reward me with good things in this life.
Right.
Actually, spirituality, freedom is always associated with the life which is beyond senses. Spirituality never say that you have freedom in sense pleasure. There is nothing called absolute freedom for anybody in this empirical world.
Right.
So, if we are talking about freedom of speech or freedom of action, freedom of profession, everything is controlled by dharma. That's what we call as dharma, moral sort of duty, moral duty. So we cannot speak whatever we like, and as you know, if we are speaking, we are at our own risk. Similarly, we cannot do whatever we want to do profession, say so many legal rules are there. So always this world is controlled by certain dharma. I mean, what should be, how you should do. That's why Brother Hari was referring, first is karma, karma jigyasa. First you start the inquiry, what kind of karma I should do? Then it goes to dharma jigyasa. What action, what is the righteous, whether this is right or this is wrong? Then third, after that only come brahma jigyasa, athato brahma jigyasa. So the Vedanta Upanishads are highest state. We have already gone through, we have inquired about karma, this karma is good, like this is the karma, this will lead you to good life, don't kill. You don't make your profession through killing others. You don't try to cheat others and make profit. You live title. It will not give you happiness. The Swami is telling you this. Mm-hmm. See, all this physical knowledge will not give you happiness. If you want to get happiness, peace of mind, bliss, this spirituality is the only solution.
Right.
You may get a lot of money by sort of a
unfair means.
Unfair means. But it's not going to give you happiness. Mm-hmm. And I am aware so many people have told like that. We have a lot of money, but now no mental peace.
Right.
The reason is that. So first is karma jigyasa, what action we should do, what is the action prescribed, and whether it is now dharma, what is my duty, what should I do? So, and then after that only brahma jigyasa.
Right. So I think eventually that it all comes to what you desire for. I think in that earlier discourse where Swami spoke about Dakshinayana and Uttarayana, Swami said that if you do all your actions and stick to what is right with the motive of gaining benefits within the world, then you only go up till the realm of the moon. That's what Swami said. unless you transcend this. I remember a beautiful conversation which we had with Swami when we were graduating, and Swami had given us a session in the bhajan hall, where one of the students asked this question. He said, Swami, if self-realization is the ultimate, if that is the ultimate goal, why is Swami not giving that instead of giving rings and chains? Right? You know, if that is the ultimate, and Swami is the one who can grant the ultimate in that sense, why is Swami not giving that instead of giving all these small petty things which Swami is giving? And Swami said this, that I wait till you ask. That can be given only when you want it. I will not give it to you unless you really want it. And I think that's what it means, because even the ability to do good, not because I will get good in return, it means that you're wanting something higher, right?
Even with Swami, one thing, like on a practical thing, what I had observed is that it is better to wait for the right time, like to let Swami be the judge of when it has to be given. In many cases, like a very simple thing, when it comes to Pad Namaskar, like Swami used to be very clear that the Pad Namaskar has to be taken when he says so. Right, and even then, like, it is quite possible that, as you know, Swami is walking past and your hand just stretches out and you just touch it. But I've always seen that, I have done that, you know, in spite of knowing that Swami has said this way. But there is a different satisfaction when Swami looks into your eyes, nods and says,
Chesko.
Chesko, Pad Namaskar. It is entirely different, because there it is coming with that complete faith that Swami has a reason. He is telling you to take for a particular reason. Right, with that is so entirely different from us just grabbing. So, in general, in the world also, I have seen in many cases, like, it is always better to, instead of grabbing for something in the world, like, whatever Swami sends your way is the better thing to accept.
Right.
That is what I have seen in my life.
Swami has always said that my grace is always there, you try. So, it is a sort of gradual evolution that which is best suited for everybody. If suddenly he goes to the highest state, that is not considered as a very sort of a...
Right. So I think you also had an interaction
because, there is
Swami,
a
think, no?
possibility, if suddenly person goes up to the highest state, there is a possibility of slipping down. So no true teacher will like that his disciple is fallen and like that. So always Swami used to say, step by step you should go.
Right.
So, and you always said, my grace is there, you slowly you proceed.
So I recall you also had an interaction with Swami where you had asked Swami for self-realization and Swami said something interesting, I guess, right?
Yeah, that was of course in Kodaikanal. I was in the mind, I wanted to ask Swami what, in my mind I was thinking, I will ask Swami what is liberation. So
okay.
whenever I was doing there, so one day it happened, we were sitting downstairs on the ground floor. I was having in the mind, but I never spoke to Swami. Swami looked at me and said from there, see, avatar doesn't come to tell how to attain liberation.
Oh.
That is not the purpose of avatar.
Wow.
You find out for yourself how to attain liberation. I will not tell. So it was something different, Swami said. But nevertheless, his grace is there. It is not that. Only that physical plane, he may not be able to tell. But at a cosmic plane, at a inner realm, he is always guiding.
Right.
That is the experience of all of us.
Right. I think that is the very basis of probably the Indian approach to everything, religion or transformation. Because Swami is clearly saying one of the names of this Avyakrita, which is the formless form of God, is that inner voice, that inner prompting. Many times Swami would say this. I think every time Swami would say that quotation of his, the four F's, follow the master, face the devil, fight till the end. Swami would always emphasize that master is not God, master is not Swami in this form. Swami would not say, follow the master, follow whatever I say. I mean, I think I've gone through at least 7 or 8 discourses where Swami quotes that, and every time Swami says, who's the master? The master is the conscience. The master is the inner voice.
Yeah, there's a very interesting experience in which, like, it happened to one of my close friends, in which, you know, he got two simultaneous messages. That is, one is that Swami is God himself, but at the same time that the message of Swami is something that you receive from within.
Mm-hmm.
Like this happened when Swami had called him to try soon after, you know, around 3 o'clock, you know, just before the darshans in Vrindavan. And present there were the L&T chairman and a couple of others who were all associated with the water projects.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a time when the Anantapur water project had just got completed.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami was contemplating the next area in which a water project has to be started.
Mm-hmm.
So the discussions have happened between Swami and the the team. Or the water project team.
A. Ramakrishna and Kondal.
Yes, Mr. Mm-hmm. A. Ramakrishna, who was the chairman of L&T at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Kondal Rao, who was the chief engineer from the government of Andhra Pradesh for these projects, etc. And these are the people who are present, all elders.
Mm-hmm.
And then this friend of mine, who was at that time
still
a student of BCom.
Mm-hmm.
So he's there in this company. And then he is, of course, completely unaware that such a project is even being contemplated. And at that time, Swami, suddenly he raises the topic on the next water project. And he looks at these people. And he says, so in which area is, where are we doing the water project next? And for whatever reason, these two elderly, very knowledgeable, experienced people, their mind goes blank.
Mm-hmm.
They are not able to reply.
Recollect which the name place of the is. Place. Okay.
They are not able to recollect the name of the place where this project is going to happen. Suddenly, Swami turned to my friend. And my friend, as I said, he has no idea of where that even a water project is being contemplated.
Mm-hmm.
But he says, when Swami looked at him and asked him the question, from deep within, he heard the answer and he said, Swami Medak. That's a district of Andhra
right.
Pradesh. So the next water project was, it was done in the Medak and Mehboob Nagar districts. And he says that even as that word came out of his mouth, no, so he was not from Andhra. So as the words came out of his mouth, he thought to himself, like, what a funny name for a place. Right? To that extent, he was unaware of
the existence of a place.
Yeah. So after he said it, Swami just smiled and, carried on the conversation. But he said he was dizzy for a while as he realized what had just happened. That unity of that there is Swami without and there is Swami within, and he is that Antaryami who is prompting. Because imagine that the brakes on the minds of those two people who should have answered that very simple question called where is the next project, they were unable to say. So who has applied the brakes on that? And who has prompted the answer from this? And all of this, in every one aspect of all such miraculous experiences with Bhagwan that I have seen, he seems totally unaffected, unconcerned, as if it is a routine thing that happens with people.
Mm-hmm.
He just, he says, he just smiled and carried on with the conversation, as if like he's thrilled that the answer has come from his student. That's all. So, really, as Swami was saying Antaryami, the inner voice, like that inner voice has manifested, for us as in the physical plane, that same has concretized into that form of Bhagwan.
Absolutely. It all so beautifully fits in as that first paragraph where Swami was talking about he doesn't have eyes, but he sees everything. He doesn't have ears, but he hears everything. It's literally about that inner Swami, which Swami would often talk about. Probably Swami is not your avatar, does not come to teach you liberation, but certainly he gives you, comes to, enable you to identify this.
Hmm.
Because most of us, whether we have reached this higher, had these higher experiences or not, anybody who has spent a considerable amount of time would go back with this strong belief that the Swami whom we see in front of us is the same Swami who is within.
Mm-hmm.
In many, many ways. One is, as you're saying, the inner voice literally reflecting what Swami wanted. And we have innumerable occasions where something you thought of in mind is heard by Swami.
Mm.
Literally, Sai Prakash used to tell one beautiful incident of, he was going through some particular difficult patch, probably in the because of academics or whatever. He was sitting in the Kulwant Hall and apparently Swami was coming around, I think distributing something or something like that, and in his mind he was thinking, it seems, that Swami, if you really love me, you should look at me now or something like that, or you should look at me and say good boy. Random thought, it was not like anything planned. Swami was in front of him talking to some other boys and this thought just came in his mind. He said, Swami, if you really love me and if you understand what I'm going through or whatever, you should turn to me and say, you're a good boy. And Swami was turned the other side and was talking to some boys and giving something. He turned back and said, did you say something? Ain't Amma? Swami turned back and said, it seems. Almost like if he had spoken it out and Swami had heard it.
Right.
And he was literally taken back. You know, it's literally like Swami is sitting inside and he just heard a thought which passed your mind. And you know, how many times we've experienced that, probably to emphasize this idea that the divinity is not in a concrete form in front of you, can come and go, come for a darshan and, you know, at the end of darshan go back. Mm. But it is to make you turn within and find that God inside.
Yes, the general experience with Bhagwan was definitely that there's very little to differentiate between, you know, what is going on in your mind and what is being spoken of by him.
Right.
It was like one seamless interaction.
Actually, this Upanishad Keno describes this consciousness as a mind of mind. The meaning is that it knows the mind of all people.
Mm.
So this Atma knows the mind. So that's how this mind of mind means that only, that it knows the mind of all.
Right.
Hmm. Over here there's one small passage, you know, that which you alluded to a little some time ago, where it says like Ishvara represents all forms of prosperity and he judges people's actions and grants the corresponding wealth. So as I was reading that, I remembered an episode which appears in the Shirdi Sai Satcharita. There is like Shirdi Baba, as Swami used to, he's at the end of a particular function, a festival, I cannot recall which, and he is distributing clothes or gifts to all the devotees who are assembled there, but pointedly left out one particular person. And obviously we all experienced that kind of anguish where Swami misses you and gives, you know, goodies to the people around you, and he is also going through that anguish. And Shirdi Baba actually goes up to that person and he says that you know, the fakir is not allowing me to give you the gift today. That's all he says, and he walks off. So it is, as I was reading this, you know, like how Shirdi Baba calls, alludes to as the fakir. So over here he says it is Ishvara. You know, he is the one who judges people's actions and grants the corresponding wealth. Of course, in case of Shirdi Baba, when he says fakir, he is speaking about himself. But even with Bhagwan, you know, you could see that it's always almost as if some complex calculations are going on. What he had to bestow, is it the right time, is this the right amount? Everything, there's a, you know, quick calculation that would happen, delivered, and Swami would move on.
Many times Swami used to say, I am like a signboard. If you want to go this path, I'll show you this path. This is the path. If you want to go this path, I'll show you this path. But actual effort has to be yours.
Right.
So what is mean by that is that Ishvara bestows whatever you have been aspiration, you have been there previously, or your previous part, according to bestows of faculty, so that you can attain the objective.
Hmm.
So this good or bad is not known to Ishvara. It is known to the individual being only.
Hmm.
But he bestows whatever you have been aspiration, you have been strive, longing for, so with so much, with heart and soul put together. So he bestows those faculty, those quality characteristics, so that you can, future life, you can attain that, whether it is spiritual state or you have been trying to attain very worldly, very high worldly state, that also you bestow, your intellectual faculty, all this mental faculty bestow, so that you can attain whatever prosperity you want. So it is, Ishvara is neither, he is impartial. He has no good intention, no bad intention. Whatever you ask, he will confer. But what is good and bad, you have to decide.
Right.
So, is left for individual, and Ishvara is always impartial.
Right.
So you cannot say he is punishing somebody, he is favoring somebody. It is not like that.
Right. No, exactly. The way Swami puts it here, Ishvara bestows prosperity or Aishwarya. What is prosperity? Both good and bad is prosperity. From Swami's point of view, I mean, I think we choosing one over the other is only in our level. From Swami's point of view, both are good. You know, what we see as good probably might be, from Swami's point of view, might be a longer route to reach where you're reaching. But if that's what you want in all your wisdom, if that's what you ask, that's what you get. But towards the end, of course, Swami makes a reference to Upanishads and how the students today don't realize what the Upanishads stand for. In fact, it's so very beautiful in the sense it's not merely some sort of esoteric knowledge, but it is an approach to understanding everything. You know, anything you want to understand, how do you in a step-by-step manner look at it and understand it? Don't look at it superficially, don't just look at what meets your eye. How do you go back? It's almost like a way of understanding anything. That's what Vedanta is all about. It's a very, very scientific approach, so beautifully explained. In fact, he doesn't talk about divinity as just somebody who's pleased by prayers and grants blessings, but talking of divinity as in these such subtle forms, it's so very beautiful. And the Swami said the problem is we don't have people who will interpret Upanishads in the right manner and present it, right? And it reminds me of a letter which Professor Nanjuniya would often share. You know, apparently when Swami had come to his house, his daughter had invited Swami for her birthday party, in a sense. She very innocently called Swami, "Swami, will you come home? It's my birthday on such and such a day." And Swami said, "Why not? I'll come." And they were living in a very small apartment somewhere in Bangalore. Swami took a car and Swami went to that house and spent some time. And when Swami came back, Swami gave a letter to Nanjuniya, sir. In fact, in that he writes, I just got that here. He says, "Dear Nanjuniya, accept my blessings. The best method of spreading Vedanta philosophy is to live it. There is no other royal road. Live in God, all is right. Make others live in God, all shall be well. Believe this truth, you will be saved." Right? And of course, that's the first paragraph. But he would often refer to this. He says, there is no better way of teaching Vedanta.
Yes.
It has to be lived and it has to be shown by example. Right? So I think we'll conclude with that. Thank you, sir, for joining us. Thank you, dear listeners, for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you have any comments, if you have any thoughts to add to what we have spoken, you can always write to listener@radiosai.org. We most humbly offer this effort at Swami's Lotus Feet. Do join us again for the continuation of this discourse. This is the discourse Swami delivered on 31st of May, 1991. At 7:30 p.m. next Thursday, we'll have the continuation of this discourse. A short while from now, you'll be joined with Brother Bishu and Sai Prakash for the Vahini Satsang, the last episode of Thursday Live. Stay tuned and happy listening.